Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I should like to thank Professor Copps for inviting me, and I should like to thank you for listening to me. I think I perhaps ought to start by explaining my background. When I was employed, in issues of mass communications at the University of Westminster in the United Kingdom. But since I retired, I've been doing some work with the European Alliance of Listeners and Viewers Associations. So the perspective that I have in this paper is a dual perspective, that of an academic, but also of an academic who is trying to look at the world of broadcasting from the perspective of the listener and viewer, who, after all, are the people who pay the license fee. And I'm going to look at the situation in the European Union, because, as you all know, the European Union has an overarching policy which seeks to regularise and order the broadcasting policies in each of the member states. And I want to look at three areas in particular. The relation between what the European Union calls the general economic interest with policies for the allocation of state aid. Secondly, I want to look at the tensions between the delivery of a universal service of broadcasts, and a public service broadcast in particular, and the Commission's attempt to develop a free market in electronic communications networks. And then finally, I want to look at the cost to the consumer to access on-demand services, which are, in their origin, financed by state aid. Let's quickly begin with the Amsterdam Treaty. I'll go through this fairly quickly, because I imagine a lot of you know it already. Two things were introduced into the Amsterdam Treaty. First, Article 16 introduced a concept of what was called services of general economic interest, which it was generally thought should be financed by the state. But there was also a protocol which allowed state aid for public service broadcasters. And for a little while, I think a lot of people thought that those two concepts were the same. We had a communication from the Commission. The first one was in 2001, and it was replaced in 2009 on the criteria for allocating state aid to public service broadcasting. Let's look first at the Society of General Economic Interest. The criteria for this are, first of all, it should be clearly defined by the member state. Secondly, that the organisation enjoying state aid should actually be specifically entrusted with the responsibilities. Thirdly, the bar on state aid, that is, not allowing state aid, must actually prevent the organisation from carrying out the task with which it is charged. And thirdly, the exemption from the rules on state aid must not adversely affect the development of trade within the European Union. If we now turn to the state aid rules, we see a different philosophy at work, which is attempting to come to the same conclusion, but is starting from a different perspective. First of all, it's looking at the effect of the state aid rules and not their purpose. which is the opposite of simply setting up an organization to carry out certain tasks. And then the aid that actually goes to the organizations, there's a number of negative criteria which, as it were, feed into the general effect. So it must not be liable to affect trade between states. It must not confer advantage on the beneficiary. It must not distort competition. And particularly following some decisions in the European Court of Justice, broadcasters were deemed to be susceptible to the rules on state aid, firstly because of their acquisition and sale of programme rights at international level, secondly because of the cross-border sale of advertising time, and thirdly that they were not suitable for cross-border ownership. These were things that the European Commission wanted the single European market to develop. There was a decision of the European Court of Justice called the Altmark decision, which actually tied down more precisely the rules for society of general economic interest. The beneficiary had to have clearly defined public service obligations. The amount that the beneficiary was to receive had to be calculated in advance in a transparent manner. Compensation was not to exceed all or part of the costs involved. And the costs were to be determined on the basis of a typical undertaking. One might ask, what is a typical undertaking in the field of public service broadcasting? But that's what Altmark said. The result of all this was that in 2009, last year, we had a new communication from the Commission on public service broadcasting and the rules for state aid. This followed a long process of consultation with the active parties. And in some ways, the 2009 communication tightened up the rules in the 2001 communication, but in other ways, they relaxed them. The first thing, and this I think was a tightening up of it, was that it said there had to be an official definition of the public service remit. The thing about the original 2001 communication was that it tried to regulate the economic framework while leaving to individual member states precisely what their public service broadcaster was doing, as it tried to have a common economic framework but then individual freedom for public service broadcasters in each member state. And the 2009 declaration actually moved towards saying, yes, you can have freedom, but there must be an official definition of that freedom. Secondly, the organisation had to be officially entrusted and supervised in the delivery of that responsibility. Thirdly, there had to be explicit public funding arrangements. Fourthly, there had to be transparent assessment and financial control of the state aid. This really reverts back to the original 2001 communication. But the next criterion was freedom for public service broadcasters to diversify onto other digital platforms. That is, the notion of broadcasting as the public service broadcaster activity was softened so that the broadcaster could actually use other digital non-broadcasting platforms for its activities. And it was only to have proportionate effects on its non-public service broadcasting remit. So in that 2009 communication on public service broadcasting, the Commission was gradually recognising that public service broadcasters could do other things as part of their official remit. And of course, this takes us into the delivery of services, information services, broadcasting services by other means, and in particular online and on-demand services. On the other hand, the communication, the 2009 communication, was actually primarily concerned with the costs of producing programs rather than delivering them, because a parallel framework had been set up effectively in 2001 of for universal service, or rather particularly for electronic communication networks, which include both broadcasting and telecommunication networks, and a series of directives implementing that agreed in 2001. Now, the delivery of a universal service can be a very expensive exercise. And, for instance, it's very easy, or relatively cheap, to deliver your broadcasting services to people in the big cities very often. But if you want to deliver them across the whole country, this can be very expensive. But one quick example, BBC in 1970, we have some data. This was when the BBC in Britain rolled out its UHF television service. The costs of delivering signals to the last 20% of the public of the population in the United Kingdom were something like 10 times per house, the cost per household, something like 10 times of delivering it to the inhabitants in the cities. So as you get roll out your universal service further and further, it becomes progressively more and more expensive, and you get a law of diminishing financial returns. Now, as I said, we had some directives on electronic communication networks in 2002. I won't go through them all in detail. There's what was called a framework directive, an authorization directive, which was about how member states should allocate frequencies and so on, an access directive, which talked about interconnection between different telecommunication networks. But there was also a directive on the delivery of universal service and users' rights. And this was a directive which was really constructed in relation to telecommunications networks, and was largely talking about interconnection between networks and also the costs which the state could allocate to individual telecommunications networks to ensure universal service. There's a piece in the directive about private telephone boxes. Remember private telephone boxes in streets? We don't seem to bother about them anymore. We've got mobile phones. And initially, this directive gave benefits to public service broadcasters because they were able to tender the delivery of their services, tender them out to the private market, and have competing organizations seek to deliver them. And often this was financially advantageous. However, in the long run, we have to remember that telecommunications networks are generally much larger organizations than public service broadcasters. And so the nature of the market between the public service broadcasters and the people who were delivering them were starting to change. Secondly, broadcasting signals are only one type of electronic signal, which are carried by broadband networks, and to use the new European jargon, NGA or next generation access networks. And so what was originally for the broadcaster's seller's market gradually starts to turn into a buyer's market. And the Commission in 2009 issued another set of guidelines on state aid for broadband and next generation access networks, which are different from those for public service broadcasters and are constructed against a different regulatory paradigm. And as the Commission admits itself, they constitute a difficult balancing act between the allocation of state aid and the free market in electronic communications networks. So let's look at the Commission's guidelines. First question is the state aid aimed at a well-defined objective of common interest, and does it address market failure or another objective? And that can include universal service. Are the distortions on competition and the effect on trade limited so that the overall balance will be positive? One of the things the Commission is concerned about, and we'll come on to this in a minute, is where there's a monopoly telecommunications operator delivering the system, is the price that it is charging fair and reasonable? But if you give state aid to bring it down, will that distort competition? Third criterion, is the aid well designed to deliver the objective of common interest? Are there better suited instruments? Will the proposed measure provide an incentive for undertakings to change their behaviour? Could the same change to behaviour be obtained with less aid? Now, what we see here is gradually the Commission starting to get more and more closely involved in the competitive situation in relation to the delivery of support of networks and, of course, for delivery of broadcast signals. And what we see is that the Commission is beginning to divide Europe into what it calls black, white, and grey areas. And these are areas which, if you like, are theoretical areas, which are determined by the nature of the competitive environment in which telecommunications, broadband, and next-generation access services are delivered. So white areas are what are generally rural and underserved areas, where, to put the Commission's words, state aid promotes territorial, social, and economic cohesion and addresses market failures. There's a sort of political and an economic criteria run together there. There are black areas, which the Commission defines as having at least two broadband network providers competing with each other, in which they will refuse state aid. Nothing about the price in that, by the way. And then there are what are they called grey areas, in which there's a monopoly provider, and they ask the question, will state aid distort market economics, market dynamics? So we need to ask ourselves, when we talk about competition in terms of broadband networks in delivering broadcast services, what is the level of broadband, what is the level of price that the broadband networks are charging, and indeed what type of services are they offering? Does that include public service broadcasters, or are public service broadcasters crowded out by competition from the private sector? There's no guarantee there that public service broadcasts would automatically be delivered. Will the access conditions enable third parties to provide competition? Will entry barriers preclude access by other operators? And can national regulatory or competition authorities overcome any problems? So we're getting increasingly involved in the detail of the competitive situation where states have an application to provide state aid for the networks. So coming out of this, it seems to me a number of policy questions are beginning to emerge for public service broadcasters. Are we sure, are we guaranteed that public service broadcasts will be one of the categories of service which have to be provided by competing networks? There's no mention of the type of service in the communication from the Commission. There's a sort of an assumption that the services which will be provided are those which are wanted. Will the price that consumers have to pay for them be competitive? And what will be the competitive relations, if any, between the state aid for the public service broadcasters and any putative state aid for the carriage of network services to carry these broadcasts? Are they going to be linked in any way, or are they simply two separate areas of analysis and consideration by the Commission? I thought it might be quite useful just briefly to look at a number of areas which the Commission exempted from its what we call its framework policy on state aid in 2005, effectively saying these were societies of services of general economic interest. It said that if the turnover of the organisation was less than 100 million euros and the state aid was less than 30 million euros, then that organisation would be exempted. It said that hospitals and social housing would be exempted, and it also exempted certain forms of air and sea transport, links to Ireland, with less than 300,000 passengers per annum, and airports with less than 1 million passengers, or ports with less than 300,000 passengers per annum, but not land transport. And, of course, not broadcast fee-funded broadcasting, which was already covered, or which would was to be covered by the 2009 communication. Thinking of that background, I want now to turn to the issue of on-demand services. And what we see today, it seems to me, from public service broadcasters is the provision of a universal service for the original traditional type of broadcasts. But we increasingly see those augmented by on-demand services, such as websites, catch-up TV, catch-up radio, and so on. And in 2009, Europe had 686 video on-demand services, which came from 366 companies. But one third of these come from television companies who are offering 241 catch-up services. So broadcasters are a very big player in the on-demand market, about a third of the on-demand market. Crucially, in these on-demand services, the storage of the signal moves from the consumer. In the old days, we had video recorders, audio recorders, where the consumer actually stores the signal in their television set or in their video recorder. As the broadcast is delivered, they store it and then they can replay it at a later date. We're now moving to a system where the broadcaster is storing all those signals in a centralized computer, which can then be accessed by the listener or the viewer using a network broadband service. And under this model, the payment of the carriage of those signals moves from the broadcaster to the consumer. That is to say, under the old regime, the broadcaster actually paid for the rollout of a universal service so that everybody could receive it on their television set. Now it sits in a central computer and the consumer has to access it via a broadband network. There's some sort of slight ironies which start to emerge here. The on-demand services are available to everybody, even those who don't pay the broadcast license fee, because usually they can be accessed online by computer, which is not necessarily coterminous with the people who actually pay the broadcasting fee. There's another model, which is the more commercial model, in which these services are available, that they are financed by advertising or by sponsorship, commercial systems. Or they can be paid for on a subscription basis, sometimes delivered through a cable service or a satellite service. Or they can be paid for on a pay-per-view service. But as I noted before, users have to pay the access for all category of services, including the so-called free services. On the other hand, if users live in one of these white or grey areas identified by the Commission, additional state aid may or may not be available. And so we can ask the question, what form should this new aid take? Should it be simply limited to certain households, or should it be limited to an area? Should it be provided by a regional authority in a certain area? What can we actually, what do we know about that? I think this is very much a field which is opening up and no clear precedents have been set, although there have been some decisions on state aid for broadcasting. So to sum up briefly, it seems to me that it's quite clear that public service broadcasters are not services of general economic interest in the eyes of the community. They are therefore subject to state aid rules. But secondly, they may use other digital platforms to fulfill their public service mission. Thirdly, the provision of the universal service of delivery has to be compatible with different rules for state aid to broadband and next generation access networks. Fourthly, that these new generation and broadband services seem to require consumers to pay the access costs. And that raises another question, which is how is this secondary state aid funded to cover delivery? I'll very briefly say that in the United Kingdom, as you probably know, we have a general election today. The outgoing government, the New Labour Party, proposed to have a tax on all telephone bills, a monthly tax. The Conservatives have said if they are elected to power, they will either do it by increased competition between the telephone networks, or they will take a slice of the licence fee money that goes to the BBC to ensure a universal rollout of a broadband network through the whole of the United Kingdom. So the relationships between the programmes and the mode in which they are delivered is by no means resolved, and I think it's something that we're going to have to come back to and wrestle with the different policies that the European Union has developed to deal with each of these areas. Okay, thanks very much.